This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
From Gimlet Media, this is The Nod, a show about Black culture from Blackness's biggest fans. I'm Brittany Reeves.
And I'm Eric Eddings.
Eric, do you know what time it is?
What time is it?
Don't do that again. Don't do that again. I ask you a question, you ask me back.
Yes.
And you know the answer already.
What is that?
It's time for Peanut Butter History.
George Washington Carver was the wizard of the soil.
George Washington Carver was the most well-known African-American of his day.
During his lifetime, Carver extracted more than 300 products from the peanut.
There is one product that many mistakenly attribute to him. Peanut butter.
Peanut butter history is our nod to the beloved inventor George Washington Carver, who didn't invent peanut butter, by the way. You should all know that. But he did think of hundreds of new uses for peanuts, including, get this, peanut meal. Do you want that on your fried fish?
Peanut is kind of a strong flavor, but it could be good, though. It could be maybe some fish sauce.
You never know.
You know what I'm saying? A little garlic, soy sauce.
George knew.
He knew. Also, peanut butter history is our homage to the many, many Black inventors, scientists, artists, activists, and so much more who haven't been recognized for their contributions. And today, we're going to make sure that one engineer really gets the recognition he deserves.
That feels like a strong hint.
Yes. And here is another strong hint in the form of a question. Eric, when you were a kid, what video games would you play?
Oh, man, there were a lot. Like, the first video game that I loved was Super Mario Brothers. The one from the Super NES.
Yes.
Play that game incessantly.
My sister played a lot.
Oh, it was so good. I played that. I played their basketball games, NBA Jam or NBA Live, Final Fantasy.
The one game that I always wanted to play that my cousin Laquan had at his house that I didn't have, and he was younger than me, so I felt like this was not fair, is that he had Zelda on N64, which was like the best game. That was like the best game.
Yeah.
And I could never play it. We had Sega Genesis. Sega! So I played a lot of like Sonic the Hedgehog and
Sonic
stuff like
was
that.
Amazing.
And then my sister had the little, I think like a Sega handheld, the one that came out in the 90s. My parents got her Mortal Kombat because that was like, that game was like the shit. And then afterward, this is how you know my parents. Fake. Afterward, the newscasts are like, you know, if you let your kids play Mortal Kombat,
I was about to say, my mom wouldn't let me play it.
They took it back from her, which I think is, I think that's whack.
I mean, yeah, I thought it was whack, too.
I was like,
I was like, I love this game. We had a friend who had every console. And so I had the Super NES. My friend Shadarius across the street, he had the regular Nintendo. I had another friend named Dale who had the Sega Genesis. And, like, depending upon what game we wanted to play, like, that's where we went.
So you grew up in a world with, like, plenty of video games, you know, so much so that you could go to a different friend's house each day after school and have something different to play.
Yeah, now you can just download them online. Usually all the friends are playing together in their own homes.
But Eric, you know that there was a world before, you know, playing all these different video games at home was even an option. Like, you know, no Sega Genesis, no PlayStation.
Dark times.
No Xbox or even Wii. And definitely no Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
There were no game consoles like that at all until 1972, when the first home video game console went on the market. I'm going to show you the commercial for it right now. It's called the Magnavox Odyssey.
Magnavox presents Odyssey, the electronic game of the future. Odyssey easily attaches to any brand TV, black and white or color, to create a closed-circuit electronic playground. Odyssey gives you all the exciting action of hockey and 11 other challenging play and learning games for the entire
family. Does that look like a hockey game to you?
It does not look like a hockey game to me. It looks like clip art.
Odyssey, a new dimension for your television. Now at your Magnavox dealer. He's listed in the yellow pages.
Wow. Listed in the yellow pages. Also, just like, what time is this?
Also, he said he's listed in the yellow pages.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I don't think that you can say that anymore. Like, maybe only a man would be a Magnavox dealer?
Exactly. Oh my goodness.
Throwback.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could see though, this is like, I mean, the machine itself is a throwback. It's like just super basic.
Yeah. They put this thing on the screen. It's like a screen on a screen.
Like when you're a teacher in elementary school, well, if you're my old age, you used to have, remember the overhead? Like
yeah.
The overhead with transparency sheets. You just stick that on your TV and then you basically paint Pong.
Yeah.
Back and forth with little boxes of light.
Yeah.
And the way you see that they switch back and forth between the games was just changing the transparency sheet
on the
that
screen.
Stuck on your television.
The backgrounds are very different. So like there's one with a map of America.
I don't know.
But it's still just the ray of light going back and forth.
Like, it just says geography.
Yeah.
And like I don't know what game is a geography game with just a map of America, a rainbow map of America with a box of light on it. I don't know what that means. You saw people playing tennis, roulette. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how the roulette is really supposed to work.
It's a circle. It's supposed to spin.
The transparency sheet can't spin.
Yeah.
It's just like stuck to the TV.
Maybe you flip it around.
I don't know.
Then they're using this massive controller.
The controller has a knob, not a joystick or a button or...
It's like a little dial.
It's like when you're trying to change the volume in your car. It barely even looks like a video game. Like, you got the Wii controller. And the games themselves are just not that different. Like, it's all basically the same... basic game happening on the TV that you just have these stick-on transparency sheets. And you just put them on the TV screen.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get excited about that.
So okay, when you were a kid and playing all those video games you mentioned with your friends, how would you switch between the games?
So you have the little cartridge.
Yeah.
And you got the cool cartridge. Sometimes, you know, you got to blow it. Like that. And you mess around, get spit all in, and you got to figure out how to dry it out. But yeah, you take the cartridge, you just pop the cartridge in a little slot, makes a little click. You want to take it out, you take it out.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Because for a long time, there actually wasn't a fancy home video game console that lets you switch between all these different games.
Mm.
It all changed in 1976, though, with the introduction of a new kind of home video console called Channel F.
Channel F, the one with all the fun. The Fairchild Video Entertainment System at your larger JCPenney. The home entertainment system that never gets old. Plug in a new video cart and change the fun. Play tic-tac-toe, shooting gallery, or just doodle. Switch video carts and play Desert Fox. Switch again, it's blackjack. Or play the two built-in games, pro hockey or tennis champ. Channel F for fun, the Fairchild Video Entertainment System.
It's complex.
This one actually looks like a video game console.
Yeah.
Like things are happening on the screen.
It seems so much more sophisticated. It's like CGI compared to what you saw before. Like other thing was base. It was Pong. Every game was Pong.
So it's like the first time you could actually play lots of different games. And the games themselves, you know, could be better looking because all the information wasn't held in the gaming console itself. You know, I guess like... combination of like the gaming console and like a stack of transparencies or whatever. You know, like you could see in the commercial that they were switching out, they call them video cards, but they basically look like old school Atari cartridges.
Mm.
And each of those cartridges could hold an entire game on it. It was totally revolutionary.
You can definitely see like visions of Nintendo.
Oh, absolutely.
And Sega.
This actually allowed people to make actual games that they could sell. Like this was crucial to the growth of the video game industry. Just to give you an idea of how much this changed things, okay? Last year, the video gaming industry in the United States alone made more than $40 billion in revenue. So today, I am going to tell you about the man who helped to pave the way for the massive commercial success of video games as we know them now.
Yeah.
The man who led the team that actually made the Fairchild Channel F console, the very first home gaming system with interchangeable cartridges. His name was Jerry Lawson.
Jerry Lawson.
Are you ready to hear Jerry's story?
I am. I have never heard of any of these systems, so this is actually really cool.
This is great. Look at that. Gamer. Look at me. I'm a gamer. Coming up after the break, I try to tell Eric Jerry Lawson's story before I run out of time.
Hey, I
okay,
fuck with
Jerry. Exactly. Big up, big up.
So you have 4 minutes to tell me this story.
Okay.
You think you can do it?
I can do it.
Jerry deserves it.
Jerry deserves.
I deserve to learn.
You need to learn something.
Okay, put time on the clock. And to make it a little more challenging, I'm going to play you some music that speeds up as you go along. So, you know, just keep in mind, the music is letting you know clock's ticking.
Okay. All right, I can do this.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Ready?
Okay.
Set. Go.
Okay, so Jerry was born in 1940 in Brooklyn, New York, and he grew up in a federal housing project in Queens. Mm-hmm. Okay, get this. One of Jerry's first inspirations was actually George Washington Carver.
Really?
Yes. There was a photo of George Washington Carver next to Jerry at his desk in the first grade, and he remembers his teacher telling him, like, this could be you. Okay? Mm. And he says that that was the moment that he realized that maybe he could actually be an inventor or a scientist.
That's so sweet.
So Jerry also had a lot of support from his parents. His father was a longshoreman who loved to read science books. And he also had a really dedicated mom who made sure that he went to only the best schools. And she also bought him like little gadgets and stuff like that and gave him an allowance to buy parts from his favorite electronic stores. So growing up, he'd like make his own walkie-talkies. Wow. He even started his own radio station.
Wow.
Eventually, I know.
And this is early too.
I know, as a kid, right. Eventually, he went to school at Queens College in New York, and he worked in electronics for a little while. And eventually, he moved to California in the late 60s. So remember, this is right before companies like Apple, Atari, Oracle were popping up. But at this time, you have to remember, going into tech was not an obvious career path. Mm. But like, you know, like now, honestly, it was especially tough if you were a black man.
Hmm, imagine that.
Sidebar, one little tidbit that I love. Jerry was actually in a computer club with Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak.
Are you serious?
Apple. Yes. And Jerry said he was, and I quote, not impressed with them.
Hey, I
okay,
fuck with
Jerry. Exactly. Big up, big up. Okay, so in 1970, Jerry started working at this big electronics company called Fairchild. He was an engineer for them, but in his free time, he was really obsessed with video games. Like, arcade games were kind of a pretty new thing at the time, like Pong, like you mentioned, the arcade game that had come out a few years back. Jerry actually built his own coin-operated game in his garage, and he called it Demolition Derby, which basically involved ramming your car against other cars. It sounds kind of fun to me.
Yeah, it just sounds awesome.
But when the guys at Fairchild found out he did this in his spare time, they were not cool with it. Like, initially, they saw it as, like, a threat or competition. But then they were like, maybe we should just make him the head of video games.
Mm.
Right.
Somebody, I actually feel like that doesn't happen often.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like,
at least for us.
People take notes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Jerry became the chief engineer of their video games division, and his job was to figure out how to build a console that was actually better than the Magnavox. So remember this, you know, the Magnavox, the really crappy system I showed you before. So he wanted to make something where you could play a lot of different games and handle all the plugging and unplugging without overloading the whole system. Like, literally, there was this fear that a video game console would explode. So Jerry led a team make a prototype, and the secret ingredient they introduced were these things called cartridges.
Yes.
The godfather of the video game cartridge, black man. Because of these cartridges, you could switch out games without the whole system freaking out, overloading, and exploding. Jerry also made a prototype of a new kind of joystick that was a lot easier to use. So they say you can move left, right, up, down, and not just use like those little knob controllers that you saw in the Magnavox. So later, some other guys modified his plans and basically built one of the main foundations of the controller model that we use today.
Yeah.
So they put the Channel F console out in 1976. Fortunately, it wasn't super successful. But a year later, Atari released their own version of a home console, the Atari VCS, which became super famous. It had a lot better RAM and sound than the Fairchild Channel F. But the thing is, it used that cartridge system. Mm. Basically, the Fairchild Channel F set the standard for cartridges and changed the entire industry.
Wow.
And this opened up a whole new market within the video game industry. You know, companies can make money off of all these new games. And players could also enjoy more games, like, you know, than the boring versions of tennis and football that we saw that didn't even make any
geography.
Sense. And that was all thanks to the leadership of Jerry Lawson. But, as you probably could guess, he's mostly been left out of video game history until 2011, when he was honored by the International Game Developers Association just a month before he passed away at the age of 70.
Wow, you just finished with time to spare.
You know what it is? It's my Midwestern speech. It just goes by so fast. It does. It really does. And you know what else, too? I was driven. I was driven to tell Jerry's story.
At least he got his flowers. Jeez.
It's almost like too deep.
Yeah.
That happened a month before he passed
right?
away.
It's like credit, man.
I know.
Give folks their credit.
Credit.
There's so many things that are awesome and frustrating about that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I play games for forever. They've been re-releasing all the old systems.
Yeah.
And so I've bought all of them.
And you have?
I have. And I've been,
I did not. You've been talking about video games all the time. I'm like, what is this problem?
My new thing is like, you know, when I put Eve down, I'll take like 15 minutes and I actually just play like Super Mario Brothers or the old Final Fantasy. It looks horrible.
I bet it does. It was, at the time, Final Fantasy was like the shit.
Yeah, but it looks terrible now. But like, it's crazy to think that so much of the structure that I'm playing with every day and growing up was made by a Black person.
Like, I know.
That's one of those things, like, it would have been awesome to know.
Isn't it wild, though? It's, like, such a specific thing. Like, I feel like everybody has that childhood memory of pulling out the cartridge and blowing on it.
Yeah.
Or even just, like, actually physically going and buying games or picking them out or getting them, like, under the tree at Christmas or whatever. I did not know until I learned about Jerry Lawson that a Black man was behind that.
Wow.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally.
And it's for so long. I mean, I'm glad Jerry got to see it. I'm glad he got some recognition. But if you think about the progress that games made in between when he made that thing in 2011, like, that is wild that you don't go back to one of the people who, you know, helped get you there.
It just makes me sad because I feel like they're always talking about these Black people, not Black people in STEM. And it's like, look, we've been in STEM. He was in the computer club with both of Steve's.
Yeah. And they weren't impressive at that time.
They weren't impressive. And you know what? Honestly, I bet Jerry was right. Truthfully, he was probably right. But you know what? The other thing is, I will say this. I already didn't have respect for Steve Wozniak because he broke up with Kathy Griffin. I used to watch her reality TV show, and I was like, they should have stuck together. Anyway, that's just my two cents.
That tells you that Jerry's right.
So, Eric, I think that Jerry Lawson deserves some recognition, don't
you? Absolutely.
Jerry Lawson, welcome to
the Peanut Butter Pantheon. I need a Nintendo Switch. Sorry, that's not for the show, but
it's
I was
okay.
just thinking about that.
I barely know what that is. All right, listeners, if you can't get enough video game content, I would recommend checking out our episode called Saving Grace. It's the story of a young woman who uses The Sims video game to help cope with a tragedy in her life. It's beautifully told. I cannot recommend it enough. Again, it's called Saving Grace, and you can find it at gimletmedia.com/thenod or wherever you're listening to this right now. The Nod is produced by me, Brittany Luce, with Eric Eddings and Kate Parkinson Morgan. Our senior producer is Sada Abdurrahman. This episode was edited by Sarah Saracen. It was fact-checked by Max Gibson. The show was mixed this week by Sam Baer. Our theme music is by Khalid B. For additional music credits, check the show notes.